Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Welcome back to Zed Games, Australia's most beloved gaming radio show, on at this particular time of the evening or morning, depending on when you're listening to us. We are coming to you live from the 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane. You might be listening to us around the nation on the Community Radio Network. I am Lee, and returning for this episode, after some kind of excursion, Jody McGregor.
Hello.
There he is. He's back. We missed him. Miss Candy Payne.
Hi.
And Razor is manning the machine.
Hey there.
As he always does.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of manning machines, what are we talking about on this episode?
Lee, you and I have been playing a cute game called Chroma Squad.
We have.
It's part film studio simulator and part turn-based strategy game.
Yeah.
And it's all to do with a team of Power Ranger-like characters.
Yes, that's right. So we will power up and get into a Megazord of some sort later on for that.
Joining us later in the program is Nick Smith. He is a concept artist who has worked on games like Hand of Fate and the recently released card game Rise to Power. Mm-hmm. He's got an art exhibition happening next week, and he's here to talk all about that and his career as a concept artist. But let's get this episode started with the week in gaming news headlines. Candy, there's a lot of news about emerging technology this week.
There is. There's lots of like digits and numbers and fancy word things, so pay attention, everyone. Oculus has revealed the recommended specifications for the consumer version of its Rift virtual reality headset. Users will need a modern graphics card with the NVIDIA GTX 970 and AMD 290 given as minimum, as well as 8GB of RAM and two USB 3 ports. The headset will launch in the first quarter of 2016 and no price point has been announced.
So that's like a $600 graphics card that you definitely need to run that thing, which is limiting for some, I think.
Yeah, it has to run two monitors, so I can understand why, and hopefully by the time it comes out, those things will be cheaper.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
Former BioWare executive producer Casey Hudson has joined Microsoft Studios as a creative director. Hudson, whose portfolio includes Knights of the Old Republic and the Mass Effect trilogy, will be working primarily on the HoloLens augmented reality project, as well as other unspecified Xbox titles. Sony is forming a new game development studio to exclusively create virtual reality games for the Morpheus VR headset. Sony has posted job listings for several positions, including game and level designers and animators. The Morpheus headset is set for release in the first half of 2016.
Are there any other VR machines that are yet to be included in this news?
For the Vive.
The Valve one. Mm. Yes, that's it. And also the thing where you get, like, your phone and put it in a cardboard box.
Google Cardboard.
That's it. Yes. There might be job listings for that as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah.
Who would know?
Voice actors for the reimagined King's Quest game have been revealed. The cast includes Christopher Lloyd, Wallace Shawn, Zelda Williams and Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants. The first of five planned chapters is scheduled for release later this year.
I'm really excited for the new King's Quest game. Also, Christopher Lloyd doing anything. He's fun.
Yeah.
Yay.
And he's done video games before, hasn't he? He was in the Back to the Future games.
That's right. And he was also in an adventure game in the 90s called Toonstruck, which was like reverse Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And he was an animator who went to his own, like, goes to sleep and ends up in his own cartoon world and has to save the world.
How amazing. Have I not heard about this? That sounds amazing.
It's really pretty good and impossible to run these days, but it's great.
It sounds like that Monkey Bone movie, you know, with Brendan Fraser?
Yeah, it's nowhere near as bad as that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Daybreak Games has brought down an epic banhammer on players who were detected using the ESP hack in zombie survival game H1Z1. Nearly 25,000 players were banned, with company boss John Smedley adding that the cheaters were cockroaches who needed to be put out of business. H1Z1 is currently in open access for the PC, with the PS4 release planned for later this year.
Man, if 25,000 people had ESP, you'd think they would have seen that coming.
Bam!
Yeah, I just have to
snap.
Go.
Knock that out of the park, man.
It's not going to get any better for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
It felt so good, though.
That's great news. I hate cheaters so much. You know, it just takes one cheater to ruin a perfectly good game.
Yeah.
I've experienced them in, like, Team Fortress 2, Battlefield. It's so annoying. Like, I really just want to reach into the screen and just strangle them. It's that. That's how much passion it evokes in me. So knowing that 25,000 people were banned in one, what I think was one swift maneuver, it's a glorious day. Yeah,
you just feel warm.
Yeah.
We don't want to go into what kind of glee you're experiencing right now.
No.
Let's move on.
Thank you.
We have a special guest in the studio right now. His name is Nick Smith. Nick is a concept artist. He did work on Hand of Fate video game as well as Rise to Power, the card game, both of which came out this year. Nick, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Being a concept artist must be kind of cool because I imagine that you do a hell of a lot of work up front. So you do all the designs and stuff. But during the actual development process, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you're sort of just chilling back and watching other people run with your creations?
Yeah, tell people what their job is rather than just asking them.
I wish it was all that simple. But yeah, my job is definitely sort of front-loaded into the pipeline. So it basically comes down from, you know, the designers designing what they want and then going to the art director, and then the art director sort of breaks it down, gives me instructions and some reference and that sort of thing and guidance as to what kind of characters he wants. And from there, we basically iterate. After a certain thing, I'm going in a certain direction, and I will, you know, do a various different versions, quite starkly different from each other at the beginning, maybe like half a dozen, and from there we can say, okay, rule out a whole bunch of possibilities, like that's way too sort of, you know, photorealistic, or that's way too cartoony, or whatever it might be, and then from there we sort of like narrow down each iteration down, further and further until we get really what we're up to, what we really want to get out of the character. It's a fun process.
Must be a job where you have to kill a lot of your own darlings in order to proceed, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was an issue when I first started in video games, and you sort of like, oh yeah, great, I've got the opportunity to make my own characters, this is going to be fantastic, and you come up with one of them, I'm dead pleased with that one, can't wait to see that one in the game, and they're like, yeah, we're going a different way, and you're like, oh, I love him, don't bury him. So, you know, I'm lucky because I've never worked on a game that's been canned, so I've always been able to show my artwork. I know people have worked in studios and they've worked like years and years of their lives and come up with this awesome artwork, and because they're under like NDAs or whatever, they're not allowed to show it to anybody, so that would be really galling as an artist.
What kind of guidance did you get on a game like Hand of Fate? Because with that, you're working on these sort of fantasy tropes, but having to come up with a new twist on them. Like the skeletons in that were really memorable. Every fantasy game has skeletons, but they all had this weird Spanish look. They had like conquistador helmets and stuff like that that marked them out. Were you told to like make them look a little bit different?
Well, that one's funny you should mention that one, actually. I'm really glad you did, actually, because that was one of the art director I work with. He's the best art director I've got on with, and we really see eye to eye quite a bit. And on that particular day when I was designing those, he was away, and I was like, okay, I've got these skeleton warrior design, and what should I do? And this, the idea came to me to just try the whole conquistador kind of thing and break it down like that. And so I just spent the day drawing those and stuff, and I thought, you know, just elaborate, and did about maybe five different versions or something. Next day he came in and he's totally got it, and we just sort of picked up the ball and ran with it from there. And so that was really I wouldn't say a unique experience, but that one really sort of came dropped straight out of the pen, basically, you know.
Right.
Other characters a little bit more sort of like back and forth, you know, iterate, especially if it's like maybe a lead character or something like that, where people are really sort of precious about this one's going to be seen load, and you know, a lot of people want to sort of have an input into it that goes through a lot more rigorous processes. But yeah, that's basically how that one panned out. But yeah, a lot of it's through either he's got an idea what he wants, or I've got an idea what he wants, or someone will suggest something as a sort of like a visual cue to go off, and we'll sort of like pursue that and, you know, try and come up with some way. That's the main thing about the job, is you've always got to be original, and as these days, especially with the internet, there's like a million artists out there, and a lot of them in Brisbane are really good as well, so it's a lot of competition, but also makes you raise your game, which is good.
Do you work purely in 2D, or did you 3D as well?
I'd like to work more in 3D. I've done a few pieces using ZBrush, which is an awesome 3D sculpting tool. But I've not yet worked into my pipeline, so I'm hoping to do that in the future, just side projects and whatnot, sort of get in the way of that learning process. And at the moment, I'm just working solely in 2D in my, you know, day-to-day concept arting. Yeah, but I'd like to.
And is character modelling your specialty, or do you do background stuff as well?
Mainly characters. I mean, if you ever took a look at my portfolio, I should say, or my sort of work throughout my career, is definitely more character-based. But a few years ago, when I left Sega, I decided to do an online environment design course, which was really good, and I sort of proved to myself that I could do it. It's just that I'm not as used to doing it. So with character design, I've got a lot more of a sort of visual vocabulary to use and pull from. Whereas environment design, I haven't quite got that experience. So a lot of times I'll get to sort of like creative block or something, or, you know, go through this process, you know, this creative process where it starts looking good, it's great, and they get into it, and it's like, oh, I'm not so good, and you start doubting it, and then at the end you might pull it out of the bag. And that process, I know with characters I'm going to get through to the end, it's fine. But with the environment stuff, because I'm not as used to doing it, it's a little bit more treacherous as far as the motivation goes.
What information are you given when you're on a job? Like, I'm guessing the creative director comes at you with, like, some rough guides for how they want the characters to be, or maybe they're super detailed.
A lot of the time they'll come up with, like, a description of the character, but mostly it's going to be visual, and I have, like, a sort of collection of images collected from Google Images or something like that. And they basically have a sort of like a character sheet, and then from different elements there'll be like notes and say, I like this bit from this design and this bit from this costume and that sort of thing, and sort of pull from those and just sort of play around with those shapes and motifs and stuff. And a lot of time I like to bring out a certain shape or something and then reuse that through a certain, you know, faction, should you say. I mean, Hand of Fate had the suits in it, so you had five characters from each suit, and so I tried to build up a sort of visual vocabulary for each suit that you could tell, you know, they were from the same faction kind of thing. I mean, easy to do that anyway with when it's like Ratmen, obviously going to be from the Ratmen faction. But yeah, I still like to, you know, give them a certain stylistic language to them.
So do the guys come up to you and say, oh, I want him to have Kratos's body with Master Chief's shoulder pads and the boots of Nathan Drake? Like, is that the language they use?
That sounds awful.
That doesn't usually happen, but I mean, I have had it in the past where, you know, like, oh, we want to look like this, make it look more like this game. And for me as a designer, I'm like, well, I may as well just copy it because you like want that exact thing, and then you sort of release it out there. And then on the forums where, oh, it looks like this vehicle from this game. And I'm like, well, that's what I was told to, but you can't put that out there, so you just got to suck it up, basically. Yeah, I prefer it when that doesn't happen. I like to be given boundaries, you know, when I'm designing. Like, a blank sheet of paper can sometimes be daunting. I always like to have a few little boundaries in there to sort of give you something to work with. But being told to do just, you know, reskin this exact design, that's pretty boring. Mm.
There was, so with Hand of Fate, which came out, it was a couple months ago.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with how well the in-game art actually reflected your own art style. So that must be pretty satisfying, right?
It was really satisfying, actually. I really, I'm glad you said that as well, because when I'm designing a character and stuff, and it's the character modeler, and sometimes, oh, that doesn't look quite like that, or it doesn't look quite like this kind of thing. But overall, when I look back on the game, it's pretty faithful. And it's really, yeah, it's definitely gratifying to see that in there. One character really stood out for me was the Minotaur. That really went from concept into game, like, just a really good realization of the sort of design. And the animation was fantastic. I've got really good animators there, and the model was fantastic. Well, the character artist, RJ's great. And, it was really, really gratifying to see that, really rewarding.
Hmm. Was there, at any point during the development of that you had designs that you thought were fantastic that then were, you know, too outlandish?
I wouldn't necessarily say outlandish,
I want fun anecdotes, Nick. Come on.
I'm quite reserved in my designs. I like to do designs that look like they could exist and it would work, rather than sort of, you know, more the Warcraft kind of stuff, which is really out there, or Warhammer. I mean, I used to love Warhammer. But yeah, some of my designs is like, that's just not my taste. So I try to pull it back a bit. But there were definitely a couple of characters in there, and so, like, when it comes down to doing the next game or whatever, I'm just trying to sort of like shuffle them onto the art director's desk. I remember this guy that didn't appear in that last game, kind of liked him. So we'll see if any of them get resurrected, you know, make the cut for the second game.
We are speaking with right now Nick Smith, who's concept artist for many video games. What are some of the games that you've worked on in the past, Nick?
I've worked on a variety of Total War games back when I was in the UK working for Creative Assembly. So Shogun, Total Warrior, Mongol Invasion, Medieval Total War, the first game, Medieval Total War 2, Rome Total War, and expansions for those games. And also Spartan Total Warrior, which is a action-adventure game on consoles from about 10 years ago, I think, thinking back now.
So you've designed a lot of dudes with spears.
Yeah, a lot of dudes with spears, a lot of pecs, a lot of abs. Really, really like my abs, so it's been pretty good.
The Total War series, as we know, recreate old legendary battles of the past. Do you go and do the research, like what the armor looks like, what the weapons look like, and stuff like that?
Yeah, so you go back there, and back in the UK, we had all these books called Osprey, and they're basically sort of kids' books or school books for historical warriors and battles and stuff. And in the middle, there was always like a few pages of illustrations. So always used to scour those for any clues or useful information. There's one artist on there called Angus McBride, who I always love. His character is really quite stocky, but his art style was fantastic. It's made it look really, gave him full of character, made it look really rich. I always liked that guy.
So you were saying before that character art is really your forte. How did you then end up getting into the Rise to Power role, where the art there is primarily all like cities and locations and these massive wide panoramic shots of factories and things? How did that gel?
Yeah, well, that was, I asked the guys, I asked Alan how he came about me, and he said he put in Brisbane concept artist into Google, and how I popped at the top of the list, so that was quite convenient. But yeah, he liked my art style and stuff, and came across and told me what the game was all about, and I was, you know, more than willing to help. Those guys are great to work with. I mean, you know, working freelance, you get the good and the bad, and when you get good clients, it's really, really, really rewarding, usually with the working with them and getting the feedback, and, you know, they got their game really sorted. Not just the board game itself, but the Kickstarter campaign they did as well, so the whole project was really rewarding. And, yeah, that was a pleasure to work on that game. Hmm. So, yeah, that was just sort of, yes, a bit of luck. Yeah.
As a freelancer, I'm guessing that the work you do is varied. Sometimes it might jump from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah, that's quite correct. I've done concept art, done a lot of that, and also done a lot of storyboarding as well. Did some storyboarding for Alfa Romeo commercial last year. You guys might have seen, with the girl running through the olive vineyards or whatever. That's sort of came out of the blue. I don't know. There's this community called OzComics.com on Facebook, and I just contributed to that sort of weekly challenges. And I did this Batman one pager, and the guy who wrote it, I really liked it. I sent him a copy, and then a couple of years later, he was the guy directing this advert, and I was like, oh, love the way these things turn out. So that was awesome, and that was great to work on that project. And then recently, I've worked on Beyond Blue's Mind Matters campaign, which is sort of education for schools and, you know, kids and teachers sort of dealing with, you know, mental health issues. And that art style was quite different as well. It was really sort of monochromatic, just two colours, really simple art style. And that was all storyboarding as well. So that was really rewarding to work on also.
Fewer dudes with spears and abs in that as well.
Less in that, definitely. I mean, there were a couple of interesting characters in there, a bouncer I remember being in there, and some ninjas. So yeah, they sort of chuck them in there. You never know what's going to get you when you're feeling down. So yeah.
So at the moment, you have your own game that's in development. We haven't really seen or heard much of it, but can you tell us anything at this point?
So, yeah, I'm working on a game called Forts with a friend of mine, Tim Auld. He's the coder, I'm the artist. He's been working on it for 10-plus years, so it's really his baby.
It's not a baby anymore,
well,
it's 10,
you know, it's,
right?
It's a bit like that baby from Mork and Mindy, you know, it's getting a bit big, grey hair and stuff. So, it really needs to be properly birthed, so we're just waiting to get it out there.
A-plus reference, yeah. By the way, that's going to play well with our listeners.
But yeah, I mean, he's really you know, keen to get out there, and I'm keen as well. So it's basically a 2D game. You're basically building up forts, Got real physics in there and stuff, so you got to build it structurally sound. As you're building up, you're collecting resources and developing a tech tree, and the aim is just basically knock each other's fort down or destroy the reactor. There's a lot of explosions in there. A lot of the art style was inspired by Metal Slug. I don't remember those series of games, mm-hmm. really sort of cute little platformers from about 10 or 15 years ago, something like that. Mm. And they're awesome animations and stuff, so that's what the art style is inspired by. And the gameplay is a little bit like cross between Worms and Angry Bird, I suppose, where you got to, you know, you got the Worms side of like shelling each other, and then the Angry Bird sort of fortification, sort of destruction. So it's come along really well, and we just recently got accepted into PAX Oz in October, which is really, really great. So that's something to work towards. Always helpful to have deadlines to focus the mind.
So the game's called Forts. I would have assumed that Bethesda held the copyright to that name.
Pretty sure we've done some serious research into that.
Yeah, no, I'm just joking. I made a joke, but it was bad.
That was awful.
Yeah, so I apologize.
So bad.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised how hard it is to come up with a name for a game. We've had a few. We had Fort War start off with, someone used that already. Fort Commander, someone used that, and then we just sort of settled with Forts, the one word thing, and it sort of alludes a bit to Worms, which is, you know, obviously similar in gameplay. So yeah, you got to stick with something sooner or later. When you're making a trailer, you can't just keep changing names. It's burned in there. No getting it back.
What platform are you aiming for? Is it a mobile game?
So it's on PC. Okay. PC at the moment. Yeah, we're looking into maybe some other platforms as well, but yeah, it's been developed on PC. You know, hoping to get out sort of like channels like Steam primarily. It's quite click intensive. You know, it's an RTS essentially, so you know, all the building, a little, you know, placing all the little verts and connecting them all the struts up to build the forts and stuff is quite intensive. But excuse me, the counter to that is that it allows for a lot of creativity, so really looking forward to getting it out there and seeing what people build. Because when me and Tim play it, we played it quite a few times, so we know what works and what doesn't and stuff. So we're building these, you know, very similar sort of forts. But when you let people play it who haven't played it before, you get some weird and wacky creations. It always reminds me of, you've seen those videos of spiders have had some LSD making their webs, and it's like it's going to all sorts of crazy direction. Like some of them are like really, and you're like, that should be falling over by now, yet it isn't.
Now, Nick, you've got an art exhibition that's opening next week.
That's correct.
Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, so there's this organization called Raw Natural Born Artists, and they run a show all around the world, but in Brisbane it's every couple of months, and they happen to see my stuff on Instagram. And they invited me to showcase my artwork at their show Sensory, which is at the Met a week tomorrow, so Thursday the 28th of May. And it's basically a show where there's a whole variety of different creatives there, from fashion designers, and they'll have a whole catwalk and a whole fashion show going on. They'll have music there, live music, burlesque, videographers, photographers, graphic designers, and visual artists such as myself. So it's basically people showcasing their opportunities to network and that sort of thing. And so I'm at the moment going through the process of putting together all my stuff. I got a couple of art books put together, one of my favourite sketches, another one of some of my favourite concept art, plus I'll have my comic Hilt on sale there, as well as some original art from the panels used to make the comic, and also Rise to Power as well will be there for sale. So if anybody wants tickets, go to rawartists.org/Nick Smith and pick up a ticket from there.
And you have a website that people can go to and check out your stuff as well?
Yes, my website is called artnuggets.net because there's lots of nuggets of art on there. In fact, the logo is basically a gold nugget with a letter A in it, so check that out. Mm.
Nick, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show this evening. Make sure you keep us informed about the status of Forts. Like to hear more about it.
Certainly will. I'm gagging to get that out of the door, and just shout from the rooftops about that one. So I'll be back in here to I don't know what. How would you say?
Harass us.
Push my wares on you guys if you'll have me. So It's been fun.
Cool.
Lee, you've been playing Chroma Squad?
I have been playing Chroma Squad,
That's
yes.
That's what it is? It's a little bit of Power Rangers or something kind of like the Power Rangers.
Yeah, it's a turn-based game where one half of it is running a TV studio that's putting on a Power Rangers-like TV show.
Yep.
And the other part of it is the turn-based battles where you get to fight it out as Power Rangers against various weirdo monsters. So the fun is that you're not just like trying to thrash monsters as quickly as possible. You're going through all of the tropes and all of the stages that one has to in order to win or film a Power Rangers episode. So each level is the episode where you start off with the dumb putties or mud men in this case, which are like guys in grey squirrel costumes.
Right.
And then your bunch of stunt actors just in their street clothes, who then at some point you will power up into your cool costumes. You'll fight the boss eventually. You'll try to coordinate your attacks with the rest of your crew so that it's very acrobatic and fun. And then you get to the point where the monster's going to grow big, and then you get to hop into your big cardboard monster and punch the heck out of it. And then if your episode is great, your viewership will go up, you'll make a lot of money off advertising, and then you spend that money on making sure that maybe next time your giant robot isn't made of cardboard boxes. Maybe it's made out of buckets instead.
So are you striving to make money from a TV show? Is that kind of what you're aiming for by how good all of the pre-prep is, the monsters and
well,
designs
ultimately
and things?
You want fans, like large viewing numbers that lead to fans, which in turn leads to revenue through advertising, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep, okay, yep.
So there's a lot of sim-like elements to it. So you have to pay a marketer, which range from your friend Dave.
Who has a lot of Twitter followers.
He's got like 100 Twitter followers and he's got a blog and he sends out email spam,
yeah,
which gets you a large audience, but you lose fans every time he sends stuff out. And then you can also hire like a huge marketing firm once you get enough money to do like the whole gamut of interviews and media press and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of granular details in the way that you run your studio, particularly marketing. The marketing stuff I thought was there's a lot of little tiny things that you can choose to do there, and you can't actually engage in all of them. Like each different marketing option will give you a different range of things that you can do there. So maybe the big company can they get you a magazine spread which will do certain things for you, or they'll get advertising on your show, and so you get to choose like little fine details like that. I think what's great about the game actually is the amount of fun you can have by customizing your own program. So you get to, at the very start, you've got a cast of 5 stunt actors who have quit their crappy Sentai program to go and start their own. You get to determine who they are out of a cast. And this was a Kickstarter game, so there are a lot of people who have been added in who are Kickstarter backers who are now available as characters on your show. But I went with having a Bruce Lee-like, a Mike Tyson guy, Michonne from The Walking Dead, or someone like her. I forget who the blue guy was, but then my healer, which is in this case the pink ranger, is a giant beaver that's wearing a like pink unitard.
Not right. What I thought you were going to say, because okay. I was about to get all like, oh, you know, trip down memory lane thinking about Power Rangers, and I love the pink Kimberly was my favourite. And then Beaver, Giant Beaver, is what you come out with. That's
well,
great.
No, because the 5 that you choose each have a different role, which is fun. So you've got a leader, you've got a tech guy, an assault guy, a scout, and then the healer. And they all have different powers that work in tandem with the others as you play, and each one they have their specialty weapons as well. So the assault is the guy with the axe eventually. The healer has the bow. All of the things that you remember from the wonderful and dumb TV show of our childhood, and also the last 40 years of Japanese television. so being able to drill down and
pick characters for that, and then name them as well, and name the name of your team and the thing that they say when they transform and when they get their robot, like all of that stuff you get to name.
What does yours say when they transform?
Okay, so I named my team the Avant-Garde, and so they all have names like there's like oh god, there's Face Puncher, and like God Commander, and like great pseudo translated names. Best Friend 2099 is the name of my healer. The nerd is Professor Impressive.
Yeah.
And so when they transform into their Power Ranger suit, they say, "Oh, it's on." And then I forgot, because it had been like 2 weeks since I'd started playing and since I'd put all this stuff in. Today, when I first called down my robot, which was the, oh god, it's got some other amazing name, like the Gut Kicker X or something. there's a language warning for what the leader shouts as the robot is about to enter the play, because he says, oh god, what does he say? He just says, "Now you're fucked."
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, nailed it in one sentence.
Yeah. Nice one, Lee.
Thank you.
So, since the battles are scripted and you're making a TV show, is it possible to lose a fight?
Yes, you can make a bad episode, and you can like have the snot kicked out of you by all of the stunt actors who are playing the other animals and monsters, and then you will have to redo that episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Which costs more money.
Yes.
So that's what you're losing when you lose.
Yeah, and time as well.
Yeah, I found that the game was pretty easy on normal mode. I think if you want a challenge, you should really bump it up to the harder difficulty. But I had no trouble beating the actual fights. But the director's stipulations I found were actually more challenging. Mm. For example, he might say, okay, you have to use your teamwork ability 3 times, or you might have to defeat the boss using your super teamwork move, where everyone turns into color, and I don't know, there's lasers or something.
They leap up into the air, into like beams of color, and then all kick the guy at once, I think, maybe. I don't know.
Other times you'll have to like beat the boss before the minions and stuff like that. So I found myself not doing those a lot of the time. I mean, failing them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think that they really add a lot of flavor to it. Like, they're basically just the equivalent of those Assassin's Creed stipulations in order to get like 100% connectivity when you pass a mission, which I found like horrible. But in this case, because it's coming from a director and you are making a TV show, just that the nature of that little bit of flavor changed that and made it more interesting. And you know, if I didn't do it, I didn't feel like I'd lost out on too much either. But it was always more fun to attempt to do things according to the guidance that you're given there.
As a kid, I always wondered why in Voltron they didn't just immediately form Voltron and then draw the sword to solve all of their problems. Does this explain that? Like, the directors, they're saying, no, you have to wait until the last 2 minutes.
Drag it out.
You can't use your sword until then, even though you have to use it in every single episode.
Are you actually... it does come up, because this is a show that... the show that you're on is one that has been inspired by years of Sentai programs before as well. In fact, Saban, which owns the Power Rangers, the rights of the Power Rangers in the Western world, they threatened to sue the makers of the game, and now they're like, they're thanked on the front page, and I think they have some kind of weird licensing agreement. Mm. So, you know, that's fine. But, so they'll... they'll talk about how you're doing stuff like all the other shows did beforehand, and the audience responds badly if you like rush to do your special attack on the boss straight away. Like, right, you'll lose fans because everyone knows.
Because it's cutting 20 minutes of a 22-minute program.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why.
And everyone knows that they don't do the special team-up attack until the end of the fight to finish him off.
It's always got to look like one of them's going to get hurt just a little bit, or maybe somebody does get knocked down, or the helmet gets knocked off or something, and injuries, how can I go on, Pink Ranger? Oh, but you can. Yeah. It's got to have that kind of build-up.
Yeah. They also, like, because there's a story that runs through it of you running your own show, and then maybe you've discovered an actual, real, like, robot brain thing that everyone's trying to steal for some reason. It's weird. It's the same level of like beautiful dumb that is actually in a Sentai program. So some stuff is like sci-fi serious, and then at other times your tech guy has to go to a dentist appointment, and so they will leave a fight early to go to the dentist, and then another guy from another show is going to make a cameo, and he will be your fifth person, and that guy is again another, like, that's a Kickstarter guy who's turned up with his own like Sentai program. He's some other different type of space knight for that battle,
right?
Yeah, and you have stuff like, there are characters that the stunt guys you get to be the monsters that you fight may not like the costume that you've chosen, and so they're there in their own costume that you hate. And so part of it is you're beating them because that's part of the episode, but part of it is also you're beating them because they're a jerk and they're ruining your TV show. So the fiction blends quite nicely as the program goes on.
I found the game, like, incredibly charming.
Yeah.
It's intensely nostalgic.
Yeah.
I think if you're around 28 to 38 years old and you grew up watching the Power Rangers, you'll love this game. And I really like that there's sort of parallel narratives going on as well. Like, there's the story within the TV show, which is largely nonsensical. It's just about a bunch of Power Rangers beating up cardboard box monsters, but then you've also got the story.
The boxing box is great. He's a guy in a box with boxing gloves.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
Jody seems really impressed.
And then you've also got the narrative of these sort of out of work actors who are just managing to put this show together.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really enjoyed the kind of the meta narrative as well.
Yeah, it's. I think that the hokiness of the game itself is reflected in the hokiness of the stuff that you're doing. They've made the production values are just like so accurate, you know, everything's lovely and fun and cute and colorful, but it's also, you know, it's like lo-fi pixel art with like chiptune music the whole way through. Mm-hmm. And then your costumes that you're building things out of are like, you know, you've got like bucket helmets or like cardboard hats and stuff, and you're using like just mountain boots that are spray painted silver, like all of this stuff. The parallels run across the game and then the show and then the game of the show at the same time. It's great. Yeah, like it's not hard particularly, but it's fun and good, which makes it worthwhile anyway as a tactical game.
Yeah. The only thing that I think they could have done better is the when the giant robot comes down.
Yeah.
What was it called in Power Rangers?
The Megazord.
Megazord. Yeah. It's you've kind of got this one button punch game where it's a probability based thing. So you start off with like 92% probability, and then it drops with every strike.
Yeah.
And you've got a couple of special moves, but it could have been done a lot better.
Yeah, I think that they could have done more there. But they've got at least like an active blocking mechanism, which gives you something more to do there. And I think also changing the gameplay up from the isometric tactical battles at that point to just this pseudo fighting game setup was clever, because you don't want to spend too much time on that stuff. So I think that while it does get a bit tedious, it's not around for long enough to really get annoying. It's just like maybe it's a missed opportunity, but at the same time, it still looks appropriate, and you still get to, you know, summon the sword for the great big attack at the very end when you destroy the monster. So, like, it's more of a niggle than a massive problem.
But overall, I had a lot of fun with this. I actually had more fun than I expected I would have. And I just love the throwbacks to the old Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
So that's Chroma Squad for the PC, Mac, and Linux.
Yes.
Out now. The soundtrack is also good. Unfortunately, I don't have a song to play from that.
Yeah.
And I also neglected to get any of the versions of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers theme.
Oh,
so now you
disappointment.
Have this, are you spending the last 4 minutes of our show singing the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers
well,
theme?
Well, I could.
Eh?
I don't think the listeners would appreciate that.
No.
But I've got some Power Rangers trivia.
Okay.
Love it.
Remember
Go.
The Green Ranger?
Yeah.
Did you know he's like a UFC fighter now?
Yes.
Isn't that crazy?
You told me that ages ago.
Oh, did I?
Also, that's not like awesome trivia. It's just a fact.
It's awesome trivia.
Yeah.
And like his...
Well, what did you want him to do the rest of his life?
I don't know.
He has to have a job at some point.
Well, I hear he does the Comic-Con circuit.
Yeah.
Signing autographs, you know, signing pictures of the Green Ranger and the White Ranger.
Mm.
He was the White Ranger as well.
Yeah.
Oh, fancy.
I also know facts about that particular Power Ranger for whatever reason, because I think, like, trivia about him is fun. He came back to be a Red Ranger as well. There you go. Kept coming back. Can't get rid of Tommy.
So, went through all the colours.
Has any other Ranger had more colours than him?
I don't think so, no.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Also, you know Alpha 5?
Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
That guy.
That he's racist robot, yes.
Was he racist?
Moving on.
Okay. Yeah, well, he's the voice that did Alpha 5 was also the same guy who did...
The Green Ranger. No.
No. He's green, but Invader Zim.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ah.
Love that show.
That's a more interesting fact.
Is it?
No.
No, these are terrible.
But you know, Tommy the Green Ranger, he's got the Green Ranger tattooed on his bicep.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah. I love
go,
that guy.
Yeah. So, we've talked people out of purchasing the game now. You should get it. Chroma Squad is a lot of fun, and you get to have your own TV station. What's wrong with you? Like, play this game. It's great.
And cardboard monsters.
Yes, the best.
Okay, that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of Zed Games.
Yep.
Thanks so much for listening. Okay, let's get out of here before I make any more mistakes.
Good plan.
Next week we'll be talking about The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Lee, you've been having a go at that already?
I've waited so many years for this game, specifically like 3, and I'm really enjoying it so far. Hopefully nothing changes before next week.
Cool.
Catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.